an airport advisory board filled with members who want to close the airport. Don't ever let this happen to you. I'm Paul Platt, and this is AeroNews. Welcome in to this AeroNews special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. Last week, the Volcaria Airport Advisory Board was officially disbanded by Florida's Brevard County Commission after it became clear that the board not only was not interested in moving the airport forward, but actually had been taken over by members who wanted the airport closed. On yesterday's special feature, you heard my conversation with Mike Whaley. Mike's a student pilot and local EAA chapter member who's been a vocal advocate of the airport through some pretty dark days. Today, another perspective on the story and on airport advisory boards in general from Steve Borowski, airport manager at Volcaria. Welcome in, Steve. If you would, start with a capsule resume. How did you become the manager of a small and battled GA airport on the Space Coast?
When I got out many years ago in the late 70s, I went to University of Central Florida, got a degree in electrical engineering, went in the Air Force, was a pilot in the Air Force for a while, active, then transferred out to the Reserve. About the same time, I went to school for Honeywell, or went to work for Honeywell. I got out of the Air Force in inertial navigation, accelerometers, gyros, and in the missile world, and both ballistic missiles and air breathers, you know, tactical missiles.
Mm-hmm.
Stayed in that for quite a long time, and then left and worked for Loral, the Loral Corporation, for about 9 years, I think it was, in all types of aviation, from FAA and air traffic control, when Loral purchased the IBM air traffic control stuff when they had problems. Loral bought them out, and all of a sudden, because I could spell FAA, I was involved in that. And I got a division with Loral that did low-level wind shear alert systems. And when I left Loral to go to ASTI Corporation, who built, with other companies, built the low-level wind shear alert system, we put them in all over the United States and outside the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up becoming director at that company, then I ended up being president of that company. So I have always had aviation there. A little later in life, as I was approaching 50, I got married, started a family, and said I didn't want to be president, CEO anymore. I wanted to teach at the local university and come back to Florida, where I was raised here in Florida, in Melbourne. In fact, the reason one of the reasons I really like Valcarry Airport is I flew here in around 1969, 1970 with my father in an experimental aircraft. Uh-huh. My father was a test pilot in the Air Force. And I remember those days, and I came back here, and it seems like many, many years later, I'm back now managing the place, but I remember the flights with my father. And so anyhow, I came back here. I worked for Florida Institute of Technology in their School of Aeronautics, teaching airport design and planning and those types of things. And when the county approached me and said, we need some help, first with Valcaria Airport, what can we do down there? And my boss said, is it safe? Is it unsafe? How do you get money? And I said, let me go in there and take a look at it. I'm the type of guy that can go in there and get the job done. So I got the job, and we're moving along with the airport now. We got a good master plan. If we comply with it, this airport will do what it's supposed to do, which is serve the public on the ground and the public in the air.
I think the question everybody has when an airport advisory board is created is, what is the role of an airport advisory board? And is that where the Volcaria Airport Advisory Board went wrong?
Yes. There's two types of boards traditionally. There's an advisory board and there's a airport authority. Like, for instance, the Melbourne Airport here has an airport authority. Those people are bound legally to run the airport, and they make the policies of physically running the airport, meaning they're responsible for profit and loss and operations and liable for the airport.
Mm-hmm.
An advisory board is quite different than that. Even though the county creates a county ordinance establishing the board has no legal or financial liability towards the airport whatsoever. Their sole function is to advise the five, five county commissioners. There's five county commissioners in Brevard County. Those five people are the legal sponsors of the airport. Okay, so it's just an advisory board, so it does not have any legal or financial responsibility. You can just give advice to the commissioner.
Well, and I think in most places where boards like this are set up, it's envisioned when the board is created that it will be a somewhat impartial go-between to kind of bring both sides down to you know, the middle when the airport wants one thing and from either a fiscal standpoint or a public policy standpoint, the county commission wants another thing?
Well, from my opinion, that is correct. But from my opinion, it's a little bit different than that. Traditionally, advisory boards in the past have been people that are pro-airport, but they have a lot of experience either managerially, financially, legally, or aviation-wise, whether it be in the air or on the ground running an airport. And traditionally, they will come in, lend their expertise, and advise the commissioners, hey, you're supposed to have hold short lines here. You need to spend money to have hold short lines on taxiways, or else you're going to get into an accident, and you can have some liability there. Or you've got an aviation issue. You've got your pattern going the wrong way, or you need to have a pattern. Something like traditionally, the advisory boards have been that way. It hasn't been a place where it's always aviation people against non-aviation people.
Okay, and in this case, I mean, obviously, since the members of the advisory board in this case are picked by the commissioners, it could have come out any way the commission wanted to be. If you wind up with an anti-airport advisory board, it means at some point you must have started with some anti-airport commissioners.
That could be true. That's true. It depends on who they select. It's all up to them. And you had anti-aviation people on this board that were fighting everything that some of the people on the board were trying to do that were pro-aviation. And so you're right. But it's changed over the years, and I've seen that through other advisory boards. It's changed, and people have tried to change the role, even though there is a legitimate set of duties that the advisory board has a right to speak on. The budget, for one, the rules and regulations, they get to comment on that, the annual budget, that is, the rules and regulations, and if an airport has an RCAP, a rates and charges adjustment plan, they get to comment on that. And that was in their charter. On the five things they have in their charter, they were allowed to comment on that. Normally, the biggest one is the budget. Mm-hmm. You look at the budget and they say, and you explain the budget to them, and they'll ask questions on the budget. How much are you putting in this or that, or how much expenses do you expect here? How much incomes do you want to do here? How much are you going to put in the capital investment plan, and on what projects? So, but what has happened, in my opinion, is that makeup of the board has got lost somewhere. And now it's come down to pro-airport people versus anti-airport people. And it's just a fight all the time, and it's not for the betterment of the airport.
There's already, I guess, in almost anything an airport wants to do, a public hearing process that gives the anti-airport people their say anyway.
Well, that's what the entire board is, the Board of County Commissioners, not the Airport Advisory Board, but the Board of County Commissioners is always there to listen to the public, regardless of what your opinion is. They're going to let you voice your opinion there, and they take that in. The advisory board was to not take that away. That's always been there. It's really been to get some expertise in the past, to get some expertise at smaller airports that didn't have big staff and could possibly use a guy that's, you know, the director of finance at a local electronics manufacturing place, mm-hmm. or the CPAs there, or they're legal there, and especially aviation people, get an airline pilot, get other airport managers or retired FAA that would work out of the ADO or the FISDO to physically get on these boards. These people have a lot of knowledge and how to go get grants, how to go do certain things. You need a PAPI there at the airport. You don't physically have one. There's complaints about people not staying on glide slope. You really need to have a PAPI so people are insured to do that. Here's how to go get money from the state agencies or the federal agencies. You get people that have been through that experience at smaller airports like this. We need that, you know. Sometimes you don't have people that know a lot about it, even though they're running airports, and if you get people of that nature on the board, it works successfully. But what happened is then we did have some people on there on that board. We've had, CEOs. We've had test pilots. We've had attorneys. And it did work that way, I think, in the past. Probably this board about 10 years ago that started to change, and it was just used as a board to slander and harass the county employees regardless of how job they're doing, and also to hold the airport down from succeeding as a county asset and being managed properly.
And for years it sounds like they may have succeeded. We'll be back in a moment for more with Steve Borowski, manager of the Valkyria Airport in Florida. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
feel stimulated? Hey, that's why Congress passed the Economic Stimulus Act of 2008, so loyal Americans like yourself would feel stimulated to help rev up the economy by spending money on important stuff like new Garmin avionics. We're talking potential tax incentives, bonus depreciation up to 50% in first-year cost allowances for qualified business use equipment purchases. See your tax advisor for guidance and your Garmin dealer for one whale of a stimulus package. It's almost like your patriotic duty, huh? Garmin, follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovation Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Flagg, talking today with Steve Borowski, manager of the Volcaria Airport in Brevard County, Florida. The VAAB, or Volcaria Airport Advisory Board, was disbanded last week after years of discord. Steve, if your airport's like a lot of former military facilities, the opponents of the airport couldn't have closed it down anyway, right? I mean, if I recall, there were some conditions on the deeds for these facilities going back a lot of years.
It was built in 1942, and then in 1958, it was quitclaim deeded to the county by the feds. And the quitclaim deed clearly spells out, you will run it as an airport, you will not discriminate against the flying public. If you do not run it as an airport, we have the option at any time to take it back, and we can do what we wish with it. If we want to go out to open procurement and sell it to somebody as surplus lands or as an airport, if they elect to do that, the feds can do that. And they can still do that today. And we've run it as an airport. But, you know, the little issues come up. For instance, we have county ordinances that says you cannot do touch and goes on 927. And now that we've had a recent master plan done, the master plan says there's no technical reason why you can't do touch and goes there. There's no safety issues concerned, and there's no noise abatement or noise issues. Our 65 decibel line lies all on airport property. So they say, why are you discriminating against the flying public and not letting them do touch and goes on 927? In fact, you may be causing an unsafe situation by forcing an aircraft, if a guy wants to come in and do a touch and go on 927, but the winds are and favoring 927, and you force him over to another runway, you could be causing a unsafe situation. So you need to change that.
Well, I think the short answer to your question is because it'll keep flight school students out, and that's the real probably intent of the rule.
Well, that was the reason the ordinance was probably put on there in the first place, right? You probably had county commissioners at the time that got talked into something that they really didn't understand. But how did that come about? It was the wrong thing, because after we just did a recent master plan here at Clarity, we surely don't have a capacity issue here. We got 2 4,000-foot runways, and we do 30,000 operations a year. That's about 75 ops a day. We don't have a capacity issue. Because we own almost 700 acres around the entire airport, the 65 decibel line lies all on airport property, so there's not really a noise abatement issue in reference to fixed wing. Helicopters are a little bit different, even though the 65 decibel line of helicopter noise is still on the airport property. The helicopter noise is a little bit different, and it can affect people quite a bit.
Well, I know the way they linger when they practice is often an annoyance to right. people.
Right. But the letter of the law says if your 65 decibel line is on your property, you don't have a noise issue. And we really don't, as far as fixed wing is concerned. But when we did have the Silver State here locally, and they were doing a lot of flight operations here, even though they're you know, they're below 65. There are 65 decibel lines on our property. It was quite noisy, and it affected the neighbors quite a bit. I had not ever received that many complaints before. But now, of course, Silver State went away, and I don't have that much helicopter traffic now, so that's died down quite a bit.
All right, well, let me ask you what your role is going forward without an advisory board. Do you want an advisory board that's composed of the right makeup of people, or are you prepared to go on and go through the master plan process and run the airport without a board for the time being?
Well, actually, it's not needed now. I don't think we'll need an advisory board through the length of this current master plan. The master plan is good for 20 years. The one we just completed a year ago is in quite detail, both from a capital improvement plan and from the makeup of how the airport's going to be. The airport's not looking to be a Part 139 airport. It's always going to stay a general aviation airport. It's not going to be commercial airlines or scheduled airlines here. That's not going to happen. This is a general aviation airport. The master plan states that. The master plan says these are the capital improvement items that you should go do, both safety items and non-safety items. It says it has how you should go raise these funds, both with state money and with FAA funds, to go fund these projects. So that's already spelt out for quite a long time. In addition to that, we approved an RCAP, a rates and adjustments and charges plan, so we know where the rents are going to be on the hangars. For me, the airport owns the local golf course here. We get rent out of that. With Mosquito Control, they have an aviation group here and a ground group here. Their rent is set for the next 20 years. We just had a new lease with them. The new hangars that are coming in, the RCAP, looked at fair market value. We established what it should be for Valkyrie Airport, and we also established that those rents on those hangars will go up by CPI every year, and every fifth year, you can take a look at reestablishing fair market value. That's in accordance with the FAA guidelines. They want you to reestablish fair market value every 5 years, and they desire that you go up by the CPI index each year. So that's all been established now. So I know what my rates and charges are going to be for everything, even for raw land. I know what my master plan has said. Here's where the airport is going. And now we have a new rules and regulations volume that's been gone through thoroughly and is going up in front of the Board of County Commissioners here this month of October. The current county ordinances that have some restrictions against the aviation public will be removed as a county ordinance. They may stay in there as a voluntary, as far as touch and goes on 927. It's going to say there's a voluntary noise abatement in place.
Mm-hmm.
If the pilot feels that it's safe to use 1432, our primary runway, we'd rather use that one. So, and the FAA accepts that voluntary, and pilots follow along right with that. They don't have a problem with that.
Right,
but
right.
You can't have a county ordinance. So once that county ordinance is changed and the airport rules and regulations volumes this month is complete, why would you need an advisory board? What are they going to advise you on?
It was providing inexpensive entertainment for the entire county, Steve.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Right. Well, some of us didn't like that entertainment.
But. Well, going forward, Steve, we wish you all the best. It's been a story that, frankly, the rest of the country has been watching because it was just kind of a caricature of some things that are happening on a lesser scale elsewhere. Tell us about this Florida DOT Airport Professional of the Year award you got.
It was a surprise to me somewhat. I was contacted by Bill Ashbaker, the head of aviation for the state of Florida, saying that he had received multiple recommendations from people that I should be up for the Aviation Professional of the Year. And I thought that was great. That was fine. And I think what they really looked at was somebody came here to the airport finally and took on the battle for this small airport that they had been losing for years. The FAA knew that there were safety issues here and concerns, but basically any time they tried to make something change, it fell upon deaf ears, whether it was the commissioners or whomever that didn't want to agree with it. No money. No one ever asked for FAA funds. No one really even asked for FDOT funds. Even that was turned down, except for small things. And I just came in, and with my, I guess, experience in aviation, I took a look at the airport when I first got here. I advised the commissioners within the first couple of months, you really have to have a master plan. It's been since 1992 since we've had one. You don't know where you're going. Without a plan, you don't know where you're going. And if our plan is to remain a general aviation recreational airport, which it is, let's go put the best plan together. And I think the state recognized that because the state helped They were quite involved with the master plan. They made every one of the meetings, all 14 public meetings. They were here at the airport quite a bit. They put up funding for certain projects going, so, and they had never seen that. And now they've seen a Board of County Commissioners that has, in the last year, showed that they want to support this airport. They want it to remain as a general aviation airport, but they want it to be safe, want it to be operational, and they want it to be at least profitable, better than break even. And it's always normally break even or lose a few thousand or gain a few thousand, but it's been strangled off for 10 or 15 years. Mm-hmm. Now it's changed a little bit. So, and all I was the point guy that kind of moved that along and brought those issues up to the Board of County Commissioners and said, here's what you've got. Here's the problems. And so the state recognized that and said, you're going to get the award. And I was thankful to get it.
Well, you probably racked up a lot of points in the martyrdom category, too. Well, Steve, I have a much better understanding now of why you might have wanted to take a job that obviously some people might not have wanted. We wish you all the best. Thank you for your work on behalf of the airport. And we'll hope to talk to you again when things are rolling down the master plan.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Anytime.
My guest has been Steve Borowski, manager of the Valkaria Airport in Brevard County, Florida. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.